Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dean Mitchell. Please find a comfortable seat in your home with your favorite listening device or buckle up in your car seat because you're about to enter the smartest doctor in the room. Today's topic is why your lymphatic system may be a key to your health and longevity. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if many of you barely have an inkling of what is the lymph system and why it's important. Back when I was in medical school, in my first year, we would study anatomy. And, you know, anatomy involved, as you're probably aware of, involves doing dissection. And to prepare for a dissection, we used to have anatomy atlases, such as Gray's Anatomy Atlas, which is well known. And it would show you all the different blood vessels, muscles, and nerves. And it was interesting because the atlas was very colorful, you know, to help you remember things. The arteries tended to be in red because they were carrying the red blood. The veins were in blue, you know, because they were what we call deoxygenated. The nerves, for whatever reason, were in yellow, just, I guess, to show a contrast. And then, you know, when I remember studying the atlas, it was sort of a funny thing. I saw these tagging along the arteries and veins was this, I think it was in green, which they labeled as lymphatic vessels. And I never paid much attention to them because it typically wasn't asked on exams that much. And it was funny because it's, you know, like with arteries and veins, you know, cardiologists and stuff, you never heard of a lymphologist. So, but years later, in some of my work in immunology and functional medicine, I got to really appreciate this sort of hidden branch of medicine. My guest today, Dr. Gerald LaMold, is a well-known, probably internationally well-known cardiothoracic surgeon, but also is an integrative physician, which is kind of a rare, interesting combination. He recently published a book this past year called The Lymph and Longevity, The Untapped Secret to Your Health. Dr. LaMold is a full professor of surgery at Thomas Jefferson Medical College, and he originally trained, I believe, in Texas with the pioneers in heart surgery, Dr. Michael DeBakey and Dr. Denton Cooley. He also has the minor distinction of being a mentor and the father-in-law of Dr. Mehmet Oz, which I'm sure a lot of you know. So I'm really excited and honored to have Dr. Gerald LaMold to the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Dean, and this is a real pleasure. And as you know, I really love to explain and broadcast lymphatic because it's not only interesting, but so important. You know, I was very fortunate to have gone 2 years down to Houston, and we were involved in the first transplants, six successful transplants in America. And everything was, it was like the moon landings at the time. We were just so over excited and thrilled about what was going on. And we actually move in with the patients. We didn't know anything about the care of them. And we just had to make our own way through the care, take them to baseball games, et cetera. But anyway, things were great for about a year. And then suddenly many of them died from what they call galloping atherosclerosis.
Wow.
And I was wondering what the heck went on.
Mm-hmm.
So after my residency in Houston, I came to Temple University and became chief of cardiac surgery there. And I had a laboratory, and in the laboratory, I worked with a professor of pathology, Dr. Betty Lausch, and we worked on some monkeys and ligated their lymphatics, and we were able to cause atherosclerosis at a very early time.
Oh, wow.
And so it impressed me if we could, by obstruction, we can create atherosclerosis. What happens if you have chronic narrowing or obstruction of the lymphatics, could that be related to heart disease? Because when I was doing these open heart operations and holding the heart in my hand, I saw these little white streaks going down on the patients with atherosclerosis. but in the aortic valve or the mitral valves, they didn't have that. So I biopsied some of these, and they were all sclerotic or scarred lymphatic tissue. So that got me wondering, and that's how we got started on it, that in fact, the lymphatics were significantly involved in atherosclerosis. And that's what began my interest in it.
That's really fascinating. So you kind of answered the question before we got to ask it, in the sense, like, you know, being a cardiac thoracic surgeon, I'm sure you were interested in making sure, you know, in, you know, transferring the, at the time, probably the veins from the leg, you know, to the heart to do the bypass surgeries. And again, you mentioned about the transplantation work that you did, which is all fascinating. Can we take a step back, though? I'd just like for our listeners, if we could, in the best simplistic terms, not too simplistic, what is the lymphatic system? And what, in your opinion, does it do?
Well, the lymphatic system is a system of vessels, just like your veins or your arteries, but they're much thinner walled. They're a layer or two of cells. And what they do is they have several functions. The first is they create fluid balance in your body. Because as your blood flows through the artery, to the capillary, to the veins, it loses about 10 or 15% of its volume into what they call the interstitial area, the interstices. And that has to be recovered. And because of hydrostatic pressure, it can't go back into the capillaries. What it does, it goes into the lymphatic system, and the lymphatic system takes it to the venous system to get rebalanced. That's the first thing.
So is it sort of like a, you know, sometimes I picture it as sort of a waste pass, sort of like a waste disposal in a sense.
Well, that's the second phase of it.
Okay.
Second phase of it, it's responsible for all the toxins and heavy proteins and fats that come in and bacteria and anything else. It has a signaling system, so it signals through the lymphatic channels to the immune system, to the endocrine system, to the nervous system, so that all hands are on deck. When there's a problem, it notifies the liver, and C-reactive protein gets sent out, and the nervous system is aware. It actually has sympathetic and parasympathetic nerve fibrils on it, and it can signal, it can send anti-inflammatory signals to the rest of the body. So, and the third thing it does, and besides storehouse of the entire immune system is the lymphatic. The third thing it does is it transmit fats and high molecules, heavy molecules of protein from the gut to the liver. So all the fats and heavy proteins have to go through the lymphatic system. We have to remember the lymphatic system is so intimately connected to the gut. There's more lymph tissue in the gut than there is anywhere else in the body.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's really interesting. And the lymph fluid is like sort of like a milky.
Depends on if it's fatty. If you look at it, as you probably have been watching it go through to the liver, it's creamy because it's taken the fat out of there. But it can look like water, or it can be a very fatty contained, you know, substance. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You mentioned in your book a couple, it's almost poetic. You say it's the lymphatic system is like the river of health. Well, why do you say that?
Well, because it's like a secret river of health, because we don't so little think about it and know about it. And it delivers, it takes away all the toxins and delivers substances to the tissue or signals and cells. The immune cells they reside in the lymph tissue. And when you need white cells to come and destroy bacteria, the lymph signals the lymph cells to go out and do their work. So it's got so many variable areas that it has to work in. It has to signal the different organs and the different systems and it's involved in every system in our body. So it's essential to our health. You can't live without the lymphatics.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of patients, if they are familiar with the lymph system, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times it has to do with cancer. And, you know, women we know that have breast cancer, they're always worried, has the cancer spread to the lymph system? You know, I always think of the lymph system as also sort of this immune radar detection network, meaning, as you mentioned, you know, there's white blood cells and our immune cells in there that mobilize, that are there for our advantage in the sense that they're there to mobilize our immune system to kill infections, hopefully sometimes even maybe, you know, destroy early cancers. Is that, I mean, so it really has like these different functions. It's essentially also a waste removal for the fats, and as you mentioned, but it's also sort of this two-way highway of the immune system mobilizing through a network.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea is that all cancer cells travel, have to go through the lymphatics and pass the nodes before mm-hmm. they can get into this general systemic areas. And in those nodes are killer T cells and cells that are innately programmed to kill any foreign substance, especially the cancer cells. So the cancer cells have to travel through the lymphatics. Mm-hmm. So to get up there, you have the opportunity by the killer T cells to take care of those cancer cells unless they are programmed to be downregulated or your lymphatic system is so sluggish that, you know, the cells don't get out, the killer cells don't get out in time to take care of these. Mm-hmm. Because there's certain cytokines and certain proteins that will suppress the flow or will stop the what they call angiogenesis, which is how metastatic cancers spread, by growing new blood vessels. And there are proteins that will slow that down. They're all produced by the lymphatic cells and lymphatic system.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way, I'm not aware of, honestly, like doctors or even, you know, any tests to assess the health of the lymph system?
Well, it's hard to measure them because the easiest thing you can do, like an arterial, you stick a needle in. And you can measure or the lymphatics is just a low pressure system. So number one, it's hard to see. Number two, it's not, everything goes through the thoracic duct. And we're trying to do some work where maybe sonar can help us measure the flow through the thoracic duct, but it's very difficult to do actual practical measurements of lymphatics, except secondary. For example, the lymphatics we know are very, very, they're only moved by external muscular activity. So that's how exercise plays such a part, because you have to contract with the muscles. Now, the lymphatics do have peristalsis, and they do have contractile muscle cells. So that's helpful too. And, so these are the things that depend on lymphatic flow. The exercise, muscle contraction, deep diaphragmatic breathing. The thoracic duct goes up through your chest wall and the diaphragm milks it upwards. It's got one-way valves, mm-hmm. so it goes all the way up into the superior cava and into metabolized by the liver. But you need deep breathing and exercise, muscle movement to get the lymph flowing. Certain things can increase the lymph flow and increase good hydration. We'll get more watery lymph flow, not viscous fluid. If you're dehydrated, it will get very dry. So things like that can keep your lymph flowing.
Okay, let me ask you this. We're going to intersect your specialty in this. So again, as a cardiothoracic surgeon, you saw patients that had obstructed coronary arteries and you did bypass on them. Now a lot of patients are getting angioplasties. The patients that you were seeing, if you did obviously do a surgery on them, and you were concerned, is there any special kind of recommendations you would tell them if you saw that they're, it looked like they had lymphatic obstruction or poor function? And, you know, because so many doctors, you know, cardiologists, I'm sure thoracic surgeons are concerned, you know, they operate on a patient, try to put them on a healthy diet. A lot of times they're on lipid lowering agents. They're on now a lot more anticoagulants than ever. So where does that fit in, you know, in getting in your very unique perspective?
Yeah, well, I always put them on a healthy diet. By healthy, I mean plenty of green leafy vegetables, mm-hmm. And less protein, less meat proteins, a lot of omega-3 oils. Olive oil, for example, is not omega-3, but it's a very important oil. And the reason all these are important, the vegetables, is because they have what we call polyphenols in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Polyphenols are protective proteins that over a billion years the vegetables have grown or metabolized into their system to prevent predators and from eating them, or they can promote regeneration or prevent radiation exposure or sunlight. So these things, if we eat them, we incorporate them in our body. So I ask them to eat a good diet, avoid sugar, avoid manufactured products and fried products, and all these things. If you think about lymphatics, all these things, exercise, the polyphenol diet, stress modification, quit smoking, they're all affect the lymph system. And if you get the lymph system flowing, it will obviate good health.
Okay. You also actually have a chapter in your book, patients going to really like sit up a little bit closer now when I mention this, that where you say that actually improving your lymph flow can help you lose weight. How does that occur?
Well, it's very interesting because we know that in the last decade, maybe they've come out with adipokines, the fat fat proteins that affect our systems, and there were studies done that show that persons with high sugar, or actually it was an animal study from the University of Missouri, but would have 100 times more leaky gut than without a high sugar. So I don't mean just by leaking out gut, but what happens is the lymphatics start leaking and all the gamma globulin and the lipoproteins leak out into the fat system. And what it does is produce more fat cells that have to engulf this. Oh. So consequently, you get this beer belly, and since you remember that the lymph system is a low pressure system, the weight of the fat cells press the lymphatics, so you don't get the flow of the adipokines into the circulation. You see? So what's happening then is, under those circumstances, you're missing out on positive cytokines, positive proteins that will help you lose weight and get in a better position as far as the fat production in your body. So without that, you can't get moving.
And do you think also, too, and you mentioned this, you know, it's something that I've observed over the years, too, that, and there's obviously a lot of studies that are confirming this, that again, patients, well, it's kind of the chicken and the egg. Patients that are overweight, it puts an extra burden on their lymphatic system. Is that why some of them are more, besides diabetes and heart disease, are more prone to cancer? Would you agree on that?
I think the association lymphatic clearance, you think about toxins and malignant cells. Mm-hmm. Toxins can be anything. They can be living cells. They can be the products of living cells, or they can be chemicals. So any toxin that comes into you, it's like the guy in the circus who eats the fire. Did you ever see the flame eaters?
Yes. looks unreal. Yeah.
But you know what? How it happens, they don't touch the tissue long enough to cause a flame. So the principle is the same. If you have a toxin, whether living or inert, and get it out of the local system and have the lymphatics clear it away and metabolized by the liver, et cetera, or the kidneys, and don't let it stay there too long. And that's really what the lymphatics do. If you have sclerotic, for example, smoking causes lymph atrophy. Does the same thing. High cortisol levels when you're nervous and fight. So your lymphatics are now sclerotic. So what's going to happen is those toxins are going to stay there longer, and you're going to create chronic inflammation, which then causes or leads to, we know, chronic degenerative diseases like cancer and heart disease, neurogenic diseases are all going to be related to this, the toxins that remain in the tissue.
Yeah, I think also something I read several years ago in Scientific American, and again, something you mentioned in your book, which I think is so important, is how the lymph system is so important to the brain and cognitive function. And, you know, a lot of, I think, the literature that's coming out now has been showing that that's why sleep is so important, because basically when you have good sleep, your brain and the lymphatic system is doing a lot of work, draining, I guess, kind of recharging the neurons, whatever. So what could you tell us about that? I mean, as far as...
Well, that's interesting stuff, because it's only been the last maybe 5 years or 10 years that we recognized that. I'm sure you remember from medical school, there was no lymphatics in the brain. But that isn't the case. The brain does have a lymphatic system.
Right.
What it does is at night when you sleep, the brain cells actually shrink to allow more space for the spinal fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, to creep down behind around the arteries and into the interstitial layer. That makes the interstitial layer like a fluid, so that it can the beta amyloid that's there and the tau proteins will go over to the center part of the brain and be picked up by the venous system and carried away. So sleeping helps clear your mind of the toxins that are produced, and sleeping on your left side seems to have better results than sleeping on your back.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay, that's again another little tip for the listeners. If you can hang out on your left side more at night, then, yeah, I'm not a back. I'm not
the right
back.
Side is even better than back. Back is
back's the worst, really. okay, now I want to get into more of your tips in the book, because this, I think, also the listeners are going to really enjoy. You know, again, because as we talk all these technical things about the lymph system, like what can anybody do to help? And you mentioned a couple of things here, which I want to get into specifically. I'd like to hear a little more insight. Like, again, for example, you have in supplements the 5 for flow on page 78 of your book. Now, it's interesting. These are a bunch of the supplements that I recommend to my patients in general. I see a lot of chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, immune dysfunction patients. And I'm sure, like you, Dr. Lamola, I don't like having patients take 50 supplements. I mean, it's a little bit not only expensive, but over the top. So I really like something that I think, you know, carries its weight. So maybe you could tell us a little bit too, like magnesium thionate, for example.
Well, magnesium is very, very important, because it's in over 1,000 receptors and 300 processes require magnesium as a cofactor. And for example, hypertension, most people are, I would say about 80%, especially the males, are in our country are deficient in magnesium.
That's very important. Why do you think that is, by the way? Just because the food doesn't have the nutrients anymore?
Yeah, we substitute it with sodium chloride salts and also all the condiment stuff they put in there.
Yeah.
And so magnesium is found in vegetables. So instead of eating all the greens, eating the yellows and the reds and everything where the pills are. We're eating mostly rice and oats.
Too much white, you know.
And they're very low in the polyphenols. See, the polyphenols are a big part of how this is working.
Yeah.
They're you know, these plant-based proteins that help us, and they work together in symphony, and they also have singularity too. Like, for example, if they pass the blood-brain barrier, like ginkgo does or resveratrol.
Yeah, that's a part of your fabulous five here. Yeah, the five to flow. Just one other quick question, because I always recommend to patients magnesium 3 and 8. There are like five different types of magnesium. This particular one you find is better for brain.
The reason there are different threonate we did because of the absorbability. One of the problems you have is calcium and magnesium are kind of vie for receptor sites in the gut. And we have such damaged guts today that it's very hard to get the absorbable. Magnesium citrate, for example, is the worst absorbable. So
That's what they use to usually go try to relieve constipation.
If you want, that's exactly right.
Right, if that's what you're going for. Right, that's what I want the listeners to realize. I mean, I didn't even know myself till about several years ago when I read a really great book by Dennis Goodman on. It was called Magnificent Magnesium. There are all these different types of magnesium, and some are better for other things. And whereas, like as you mentioned, citrate is really more as a laxative to get the absorption of the magnesium. You know, in my practice too, we measure what's called the magnesium in the red blood cell, which is one of the most accurate ways. You know, if you get a normal, regular serum magnesium, I always tell my patients, pretty much everybody is a normal unless you're almost dead.
Right.
So
the last thing to go is the serum magnesium, because it's an intracellular cation.
Yeah.
So it's 80% of it's in the cell, and you got to get a red blood cell. It's the easiest to get that cell's magnesium, just to withdraw and spin it down.
You know, it's interesting. Many years ago, too, because I've always, I think a little bit like you. I hope you don't mind me comparing myself to you, but I was always exploring different things in medicine. Because, you know, sometimes in our conventional medicine, as great as it is, and, you know, and such a high standard that we have to hold ourselves, you know, you just would come up against limitations. So there was a time about 20 years ago, I was going to some very unusual alternative medicine conferences on cancer. You know, where they were doing some very unusual things with enemas and all that. And I was just listening. I wanted to take it all in. But one of the things that intrigued me, and it brought me back to your book, was besides following a plant-based diet and doing like thing in these coffee enemas in this particular program, they had patients doing the trampoline rebounders. And I was listening, saying to myself, what the heck are they talking about? What is here? This cancer patient who's battling all these other things should be jumping up on a little bit of a trampoline. And they explained at that time, again, something with the lymph. So when I came across in your book, you know, it was kind of like bingo. You know, again, I always say when I hear a couple of things from, you know, sources that I trust. So tell us a little bit about trampoline rebounders. And also, actually, I use this a lot now. Somebody introduced me to those vibration plates, which I really like. You know, you know, so how does that help the lymphatic system?
Well, the trampoline is interesting because, as I said, the thoracic, everything comes through the lymphatic in the thoracic duct in your chest. The thoracic duct has one-way valves like the veins do. So every time you go up, the fluids go up with your body.
Okay.
And then when you go down and stop, they want to come down, but they're stopped a little higher up because of the valves. So as you do your trampoline, the lymphatic fluid keeps on moving up and up and up. Mm. And you can get tremendous amounts. You can get your heart rate up to over in the low hundreds in a short period of time with the trampoline.
Because, you know, it's funny. I know there's a gentleman I heard on another podcast. You know, he was in finance, and they were asking him a lot about life questions because he had such a great mind and outlook. But he said one of the things he did every day, he's like 90 years old now in very good health. He said he does an hour of the trampoline every morning. And he said, you know, it's been found to be even a better cardio workout than doing the bike or treadmill or anything. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. We used to have my mother-in-law passed away at 95 or 6, But at the end, she did the trampoline low.
See, right? Yeah, you don't have right. It's not like just so our listeners know, it's not like the acrobats. You have to be on this huge trampoline bouncing in the air and doing somersaults. It's just a little bit of, those small trampolines, just a little bit of up and down, right?
Right. And what she did at over 90 is she'd sit on it and just bounce.
Really?
Yeah. So, anything you can do to move that, because when you bounce, you're going to take deeper breaths.
Right.
The diaphragm is going to push up on the thoracic wall where the thoracic duct is and squeeze it up, and it's going to stay up.
Yeah.
Next move, it's going to make it a little higher. So that's the secret of its trampoline. It's a fascinating
thing. Okay, we're just going to warn our listeners not to do any bungee jumping. I cannot see that being beneficial.
and the vibratory is excellent, I think, because it moves without involuntary movement of the muscle is going to massage the lymphatics. And in one way, with a one way.
Yeah. They're not very expensive too. Just for the listeners to know, I got mine for about $100. I think it's a great investment. You feel really good after it, especially after you exercise. Let me ask you about massage. And, it's really funny. One of my attending professors at Columbia was once we were having a discussion between rounds, and he had taken care of some very famous celebrities, and we were talking, and some of them, I think he mentioned Bob Hope, one of them that he knew through some other colleagues, and he said these guys used to get massages like three times a week. And that's what kept their vitality. Yeah. So I was curious what you thought, I guess it would have to be a good medical massage. I mean, what is it that, could really help the lymphatic system?
First comment is, you're only as good as your press, and you're in trouble when you start believing it yourself.
Okay.
I think that the massage,
Massage, like a medical massage versus, a lot of times people go to a spa and they get a massage, which, they feel good, but there probably is some good therapeutic.
Once again, it does the same thing. You're increasing your lymphatic flow. Books by these masseuses that say the lymphatics are the most importantly affected part of your body when they do the massage. So there was a study done by a Dr. Peterson in Denmark. He used a low dose of E. coli toxins, and he injected them into young, healthy athletes. Mm. He told them to go to bed and bed rest, and he would measure the levels of the toxin and see how long it took to get out of the system.
Mm. Yeah. Go ahead.
And then he got them better. He took the same people back several weeks later, injected them, and told them get on a bike and exercise for 20 miles. Pump as fast as you can. The toxins were, when they measured them the first day, they were almost gone.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. So the effect of clearance of the lymphatics by exercise or massage or activity is phenomenal.
Wow, that's really impressive. All of these tips, can be so important. So, Dr. Lamo, as we sort of kind of conclude a little bit, first of all, you look amazing. I'm not going to ask you your age, but you look super healthy. You're super sharp. What would be the tip that you would pass along to our listeners, for a vibrant life as we all age?
Get a good wife.
Okay,
who wants to take care of you? She looks up. She's amazing.
Oh wow! Okay, and that's the secret.
The other thing is recognize the fact that you're here for a purpose, and you may not know what it is, but you eventually will know what it is. It's usually being useful and doing good things that are truthful and loving.
Yeah,
that's the best you can ask for.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that all these other things, sometimes patients get super focused on their diet or even exercising, and that stuff is all important, because if you're not healthy, you can't do for others. But if you can do for others and contribute to this world, I think, you know, honestly, in the patients I've seen over my 30-year career, the ones that I find so fascinating still have a hunger for life to, you know, be with their family, you know, to help others. And I don't think you're ever too old to do any of that. And, you know, and again, I think the kind of work that you've done throughout your whole life is, you know, I remember seeing you actually on the Dr. Oz show. And mm-hmm. I was like, I remember Mehmet had introduced you. And I'm like, this guy is very impressive, you know, secret weapon here. And I know your daughter, Lisa, also is really phenomenal. So anyway, Dr. Lamo, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on my podcast. Again, for any of the listeners, his book, Lymph and Longevity, very interesting read. I think you really need to pay attention to this aspect of your health, and you can work with your doctors or even other allied health professionals who are very in tune with this. And anything else you want of the listeners, if they want to go to any kind of work that you're doing?
No, I'm looking now on the significance of the polyphenols as a group and mm-hmm. how they affect different. It's fascinating, a whole new world for me. So that's great.
All right. Terrific. Again, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Lamo. Well,
thank you.